This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
That's right, you are listening to Fender Bender on Joy 94.9. A big welcome to everyone out there. Thank you very, very much for joining us on this Father's Day in September. Happy Father's Day to all the dads out there. Mine in particular, if you're listening, happy Father's Day, Dad. I hope you're listening. You are the man that got me into cars in the first place, so you're the reason I'm here. Look, we've got quite a ludicrous amount on the show. Joining me here, of course, is the wonderful Mike Costello. Mike, thanks for joining us.
Always, Tim, always.
Good to see you.
Indeed.
You're well?
I am, and I'd love to put the word out to my old man as well, if he's listening.
Beautiful. Good Indeed. To hear. Absolutely. It's the day for it. We've got quite a massive show today, actually. We are chatting with David McCarthy, who is heavily involved with Joy, but also head of communications for Mercedes-Benz Australia, former journalist, knows a lot about cars, so we'll be having a chat to him about quite a few things to do with Merc and some of his adventures up north, which you'll hear about very soon. We're also going to be looking at the coolest cars from movies, and we very much want your feedback, people. We'll be having a look at anything from, I nearly said Alan Bond. I did mean James Bond.
James Alan Bond could be a spin-off character of some sort, perhaps.
Well, or he, you know, he's the disgraced businessman from your hometown, I believe.
From my sunny hometown,
yes,
indeed.
Yes. I'm sure he's got some lovely cars, or he did at one point in his life. No, cool cars from movies. Christine, think about how awesome the Bond cars were. Pop over to Facebook and like our page, Fender Bender Joy. We are very keen to hear from you've got lots of news and other stuff coming up. We're very excited to have in the studio the wonderful David McCarthy, or Macca, as I will be now referring to you for the rest of the show. Macca, welcome.
How are you guys?
Very well. How are you?
I'm pretty good. I don't shave on the weekends.
Oh, look, well, so, yeah. I don't shave any day.
Yeah.
You know? Why should you, I say? Now, Macca, of course, is heavily involved with Joy, and some of you guys might know him through that, but also a motoring journalist from a few years back. I won't say many years back. You might hit me. And, of course, now head of communications at Mercedes-Benz Australia. Or is it Daimlerist? Is it Daimler-Benz?
It's actually Mercedes-Benz Australia Pacific.
Ah. Was it Daimler at one point?
It was Daimler Chrysler Australia Pacific.
Mm. Okay.
So Chrysler's gone.
Okay, yes.
They're down at Dandenong at the old truck plant.
It's where they belong. No, we shouldn't say that. I'm sure they're doing well now they're with Alfa Romeo. But Mike, anyway, back to you. A bit of news, if you would.
Righto. Well, first up, we got Ford. They revealed pretty clear clues to their dramatic design future with a stunning four-seat fastback concept during the week, which they showed off ahead of the public debut at the upcoming Frankfurt show that I've been harping on about.
Yes.
Now, the Blue Oval's EVOS concept has not two but four radical gull-wing doors that open from rooftop hinges, a plug-in hybrid powertrain, and a host of cutting-edge cabin tech. Now, this car may also explain international reports and rumours that have suggested Ford would debut a new Focus-based coupe this year, since the EVOS is very similar dimensionally to that car. Reports out of the US, meanwhile, suggest that the concept may even get the ball rolling on a reinvention of the iconic Capri.
Oh, God.
Which I'm sure would have some strong responses from people. Mm. Although Ford itself stresses that this car is a one-off design exercise only. Now, I think this car's phenomenal. We've actually got a picture of it up on the Facebook page if you want to go and have a look. Fender Bender Joy. There's a hint of Aston Martin about it.
It's really lovely. Yeah, actually, that's a really good point, because I was trying to work out, it does look like something, but I wasn't really sure what, but maybe it is a bit Aston-esque.
Pure Aston. Remnants from when they owned them, perhaps.
So we won't see this as a real production car.
I wouldn't have thought. No. I mean, they're saying that they're going to take hints, and it's a fair indication of where they're going with their design. Also, it's got some cool tech in the cabin that they will use at some point.
Yeah.
It's a smart car. They're saying that it can actually learn a driver's habits and capabilities.
Oh, wowzers.
Which, you know, they can overlay that to weather data, for instance.
Yeah.
And, you know, they can adjust, or the car can adjust its settings.
Okay.
Appropriately, which is pretty interesting. It's a smart car, in other words, much like Kit from Knight Rider, which we will be talking about later, by the way.
Absolutely.
Now, the crazy doors, they're not going to make production, but there's no reason why they can't do a car like this.
Mm.
You know, the dynamics are there, it's the right size, you know, why not?
And they need a bit of a hero, don't they?
at the moment.
You know, they've got some great product, but they need something that's a bit, you know, a bit sexy.
Now, of the panoply of other concepts and future models that poured out this week ahead of their Frankfurt debuts, one that really excited me was the Land Rover DC100 concept. Chances are, when you think of the iconic British brand Land Rover, you think of the boxy Defender. The thing looks the same now as it has for decades. It's sort of like seeing a video montage in fast forward of a crowd walking past a landmark. You know, everything moves, but there's one thing in the middle that stands still. The Toughlanders, of course, has had some mechanical changes to bring it forward over the years, but its rugged charm is fundamentally the same as it's always been. Mm. Well, the brand has decided it finally has to undertake the Herculean task of bringing the car into the future, while keeping traditionalists and purists happy as well, which is a pretty unenviable proposition.
Yeah, that's very difficult. It's very cool, though, this the
well, I think it is. I mean, and it's look, it's not the definitive next-generation Defender. It's merely a concept,
yeah.
A design exercise, as they call it. But they have confirmed that a new Defender will be available and in production in 2015. Which is a mere 67 years after the current generation debuted.
Oh, wow. So, you know,
it's a long time between drinks. There is a picture, once again, up on the Facebook page. So, you know, I hope it's a fair indication of where they're going.
Yeah.
Because I think this thing looks brilliant.
Yeah.
But, you know, why don't you jump on the page and tell us what you think?
Exactly, do.
Now.
Very sexy.
We're going to go to BMW now. And they seem to be sending out a message to say sack the chauffeur. And I'm sorry to do it to you, David, but we're going to talk about BMW briefly. They, during the week, announced they are developing a highly automated, practically self-driving 5 Series prototype. Now, the technology allows the car to brake, accelerate, and pass other vehicles on its own on motorways, or the German Autobahns, while also monitoring and adapting to the prevailing traffic conditions at speeds of up to 130 k's. We've got some pretty advanced tech already in cars, and we're seeing sat-nav and radar-based adaptive cruise and lane control and all these sorts of things. So this futuristic idea is closer than ever to becoming reality. And the German brand has even programmed the system to allow merging vehicles to join the traffic flow, even changing lanes to give them some space, which is perhaps a bit unlike the stereotypical BMW human driver.
Oh.
And you may remember, Jeremy Clarkson went for a spin around a track on Top Gear back in 07 in a self-driving 3 Series.
Kind of an iteration
of that, I guess. It's a bit of a development of that.
Okay.
But for the real world.
How bizarre.
Indeed. Yeah. Indeed. The future appears to be, well, here.
I know. It's like the start of that show Beyond 2000, but it's happening now.
I wish they'd reinvent that show, actually.
They did, and it didn't do very well.
Really? When did they do that?
A few years ago. It's that swimmer who... Oh, God, I can't even remember his name. It didn't do well.
It must be memorable if I remember it that well.
Yes. I apologise.
Now I'm going to wrap up this week with, well, I guess a wrap of new and facelifted models that have hit the market this week. We had the launch of Kia's rather nice new Rio, the car that shows it really isn't all in the name. The pert city car banishes memories of the rather drab previous models that bore the same merry badge with sure-footed perspicuity. I had to throw that word in.
Wow.
It's my word of the week.
That's amazing.
BMW also hosted the launch of the Hot 1 Series M Coupe, a screamer that holds its own against Big Brother M3. And I promise you, David, that's the last time I'll mention BMW today. Renault unveiled a special Monaco Grand Prix-inspired version of the Megane RS hot hatch. Volkswagen made Bluetooth standard on most Golf models and Mitsubishi upped the specs on the ASX. Finally, great. Holden also announced very mild fuel savings on the Commodore, fixed up the aerodynamics and things like that.
Mm.
Probably with one eye on the four-cylinder Falcon EcoBoost, which is also around the corner.
Mm.
And that is the news of the week.
That's beautiful. We'll be back very shortly to have more of a chat about that. Bit of the Minogue there. That is the elder Minogue, of course. Kylie, get out of my way. You are listening to Fender Bender on Joy 94.9. Lots on the show today, and of course, sitting in with us, we've got the wonderful David McCarthy. Naka, was there a little bit too much BMW content in that news?
No, the car market's like a democracy.
That's true. You know, you just got to share the love around a bit.
Or it's like barracking for Collingwood. Someone has to do it.
Far too many people have to do it when it comes to Collingwood, but
that's
anyway.
True. As a Geelong supporter, I'm having a particularly fantastic weekend.
Aren't you just smug today?
Just a little bit. Look, it's got to be done. It's got to be done. But no, thank you very much for joining us. We're very excited to have you. Now, you, of course, have a bit of involvement with Joy and have done for many years. So currently, your role is not chairman, but president.
President. And I actually have to start off. I have to send a cheerio. Now, I know that's illegal. To our general manager, Tess. and his partner Ian who are listening, so that way all the things I want him to do next week will get done now. But yeah, I'm the president, and it's actually a fantastic board.
Yep.
Very involved, very engaged, very cohesive. The organisation is travelling really, really well.
That's
we have
great.
Our AGM the end of October, and we'll have some good news to report. The station's, I think, has never sounded better.
Yeah,
what
that's fantastic. Yeah, that's good. It's all positive, and I guess, well, technically, you're my boss, so I have to be really nice to you. No, of course not. But you've had involvement, of course, in a broadcasting capacity here. So there was a motoring show a little while ago. Can you tell us about that?
I think it actually finished just over 5 years ago, 5 or 5.5 years ago. It was called Talking Cars.
Yep.
It ran in that format, I think, for 18 months or so, and then there was another format before that. It actually started off a few years before that in Drive when Damien Nicholas was doing Drive.
Yes.
And once a week I'd come in and chat for 15 or 20 minutes. Well, he used to say, just turn the microphone on and off I'd go. So.
Okay.
But it was interesting because at the time, because I was a motoring journalist and I was for 7 years, and it was actually quite difficult getting any traction for the gay media, because I predominantly wrote for that at the start.
Yep.
And then for Joy, it was quite difficult getting traction. One person who gave me a big help, she's no longer with us, but Louise Teasdale, she was the head of PR at Ford.
Yep.
And she was fantastic, and she, a lot of funny stories about that, about people moving place names at launches so they didn't sit next to the poof. But
wow.
Louise basically said to one of them who moved to place name, I won't use the exact words she used, but a couple of them are near the front of the alphabet.
Yep.
You something something, if you move one of those place names, Macca's place name again, you'll never come on another Ford launch.
Yeah, wow.
So
I can't believe that would happen.
Yeah, but, you know, now, I mean,
things have
motoring
changed.
Journalism is full of sodomites.
Thank God for that.
That's right.
I mean, you know, we
there's
know what
even a
good.
Couple of dykes, I think, but they haven't, perhaps they haven't burst out yet. Look, the industry is a really interesting industry.
Mm.
And just as everything else has changed, communications have changed, electronics have changed, so has the car industry. And a lot of that, I suppose, the change in lifestyle and how we communicate is now in cars. So,
yep.
But yeah, look, I loved it. I was a motoring journo for 7 years or so, and it was fantastic. Probably the best time I used to organise Wheels Car of the Year.
Yes.
And I did that for 5 years.
Mm.
And I still have an unbroken record for the last 10 years. Before Wheels Car of the Year starts, I used to write the car that I thought would be the winner on a piece of paper in an envelope.
Yep.
And for five years when I was there, and it was always secret. Jed Bulmer used to count the votes in the toilet.
That's another way of doing it.
Yeah. And that actually tradition has been continued by Bill Thomas. The 5 years since I've left, motoring journalism, I've picked it. Of course, one of them was C-Class in 2007, but I'm not going to tell you what I think is going to win this year.
I was going to say, because, I mean, were you thinking what, not necessarily what should win, but what you think will win, what you think they would vote for?
Well, one of the things, you know, that's interesting about, I mean, Wheels Car of the Year is the only award you want to win, seriously.
Yeah.
The other awards, you know, have validity, but Wheels is the one, and it's actually the longest continuous Car of the Year award in the world.
Yeah.
But understanding how it works, and they're quite open about how it works and what the criteria is and how it's judged.
Yeah.
So I apply that and I think, okay, well, which car's going to win?
Right.
And also understanding the whole process helps. But, of course, you know, I haven't been involved in that for 5 years, and it has changed quite a bit. But let's hope I can get to 11 years being correct.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Fingers crossed.
Mm.
We actually did a few weeks ago, we had a bit of a segment looking at the Wheels Car of the Year over the last, well, I think we went
since
back.
The inception.
Yeah.
That's right.
It was interesting to see. I mean, I'd never considered it, but just the different variety and scope of cars that have won it. You know, from, you know, $200,000 luxury cars, the big Lexus and the Benz S-Class won it. And through to the Holden Barina, one. It
That's
sort of
right.
covers the spectrum. It's one of the few awards out there.
Which,
that
of course, the Barina only won after Peter Hannenberger gave an undertaking that the centre rear seatbelt would be fitted.
They had that policy.
Really?
Would be retrofitted to the cars that were here and all cars that came in, otherwise it wouldn't have won.
Wowzers.
And so that goes to show how big Wheels Car of the Year is, I suppose, if he's making those kind of promises.
But that's the beauty about motoring journos. You get to drive these cars upon release, and you're kind of almost dictating a lot of the time to the makers to say, what about this, you know, picking up whether it's a flaw in how the car drives or something like that, like a lap sash seatbelt or something. And then they go back and, well, depending on the maker, they go back and, you know, fix it up.
Depending on the maker and depending on the power of the organisation you write for, perhaps.
Well,
but I think the seatbelt's a good example of doing
that.
Yeah. There was one manufacturer, not from Europe, I won't say which other part of the world it was from, and once I asked a senior Wheels Car of the Year judge, why haven't we won Car of the Year? And he said, simple, make a good car.
Wowzers.
And anyway, that was a... There was some other language there as well.
Yeah. Thank you for joining us again here on Fender Bender on this wonderful Father's Day, Sunday 4th? I want to say the 4th of September. Yeah. That sounds about right, doesn't it?
I think it you're is. Right.
Thank you very, very much. And we are, of course, here with the wonderful David McCarthy from Mercedes/Joy/Wheels/just, you know,
a man
the
of
Laird,
all talents,
maybe.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. Haven't been to the Laird for a while.
Haven't you?
No, too busy.
You're busy. Mm. Oh, right. I thought you meant that was too busy. No, fair enough. And so you are a bit crazy busy with Merc. So how long have you been involved with Mercedes?
I've got 5 years up now, and I started. Yeah, so I started 5 years ago. One of the most challenging parts of it is, as the PR person, you sit between the company and the journalists. So you actually have, I wouldn't say two masters to serve, because that'd be nice. But you have two different spheres of influence that you've got to be involved in.
Yeah,
and that can be a bit of a challenge sometimes.
I mean, as a journo, when you do ring up a PR person, we do expect you to know everything straight away, and I can imagine having to undertake that and to know your product that well inside out would be one of the biggest challenges. I mean, what prompted you to move across into the big bad world of PR?
Look, I'd worked pretty hard in motoring journalism to get where I wanted to be. I was working 2 weeks a month at Wheels, and I was writing for the Gay Press. I was also writing for carpoint.com.au and doing some other stuff as well, doing a bit of stuff for Cars Guide. And I actually was exactly where I wanted to, and this position came up. I threw my hat into the ring, and I got it.
Yeah.
So immediately prior to that, I'd actually been approached by Mitsubishi, and I didn't want to live in Adelaide. So
that's fair enough. That'd be a deal breaker.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things is, you know, like, for example, you've been talking about Frankfurt. All the European manufacturers have a huge role out of product at Frankfurt. I'm going with 6 or 7 journos, and for 12 days. And we first thing we do is we drive the new M-Class in Munich and in Austria. Then we drive to Stuttgart, and we actually go to a soccer game, a football game.
Oh, yes.
In Stuttgart, because it's at the Mercedes-Benz Arena. Then we go to the museum the next day. Then we go to Frankfurt for the show, where there's the new B-Class, which has already pretty much been announced. Smart scooter, electric smart, a few other products. There's a concept, 125-year concept.
Oh.
And then immediately after Frankfurt, we then go to Monte Carlo.
It's a tough life, mate.
But it's work. You've got to herd the cats.
And what are you doing in Monte Carlo?
SLS Roadster. So, it's a lot of travel and, you know, a lot of packing and unpacking. Getting into cars, getting out of cars. I know it sounds...
I pity you.
But no. I tell you, it is hard work. And what you've got to do is you've got to allow enough time in there, one, to rest, and also for the journos to file their stories. So otherwise, there's not much point.
Yes, the joys of deadline pressure, I suppose.
Yeah.
On the home front, how's Merc going at the moment in Australia?
Well, pretty good. Last month... I hope I don't get into trouble for this. Well, I won't. The VFACTS figures. VFACTS is the how the industry records its figures. Anyone who quotes you a figure other than VFACTS probably typing with one hand. So,
it's true.
Last month, Mercedes-Benz, we sold 1,529 passenger and SUVs.
Give us some perspective on that.
That's an annual sales rate of around about 18,000, 19,000. One of the things to remember I'll give you, BMW was 1,370 and Audi was 1,080.
Ah.
Now, month to month, you know, it does differ because cars arrive and, you know, you've got to get them out of customs, you then got to get them pre-delivered and get them registered. So you know, the sales figures are up and down, but I think probably year to date, it's very, very close. There's probably only 100 units in it.
Right.
But, you know, there's a lot of talk that, you know, we're watching exactly what BMW is doing and vice versa. We're actually not. We're actually concentrating on what we're doing. It's the same as, Joy. Sure, we're aware what other stations are doing. You're not successful in this business by moving forwards, walking backwards. And, you know, you've just got to keep your eyes on the targets that you have. And, look, it's a tough market out there. It's every sale is hard to get across the line. People are being cautious. But if you have the right product, and this applies across all segments. If you have the right product, you know, whether it's, you know, something like a Kia Rio, whether it's a C-Class, you know, it really doesn't matter. If it's the right price and you've got the relationship with the customer right, you'll sell it.
One thing that interests me is you released the C-Class Coupe a couple of months ago. Now, how's that going so far?
Well, the problem we have is pretty much our allocation for the rest of the year is sold out.
Wow.
The whole year is sold out.
So, of which 120 or so of those are C63 coupes that will be delivered before the end of the year. So, yeah, C-Class Coupe is going to be a fantastic car. One because of the entry price, but it looks great. It's a great drive. I don't know whether you've driven it yet, but it's everything about the C-Class that people like in a different body. It's pretty good. In fact, pretty damn good.
Yeah. And just going back as well, looking at the rise of Audi, excuse me, over the last few years, I mean, has that been a bit of a scary ride, as you know?
No, look, I mean, nothing in the car industry is ever a surprise because there's such long lead times. I mean, Audi's been on a product offensive for a very, very long time. And, you know, A8, for example, is now doing very well for them in Europe. Previously, A8, it didn't. Their model offensive, whether it's, you know, whether it's from A1 or all the way up to A8 and to R8, you know, it's a huge range. It's a huge range. And they're, you know, they know what they're doing. They have the benefit, of course, of being able to share platforms with Volkswagen and Skoda and Seat, etc. And that gives them some economies of scale. But they're a very strong competitor. But, you know, a person who buys an Audi or a BMW or a Mercedes, they're actually, people will tell you there's a lot of cross-shopping. That's not true.
Right.
People do like, not, some people do, but the majority of people like a particular brand and they like the way a particular car looks like. Someone who buys an M3 is not interested in a C63.
So return buyers are a massive deal for
And that's really important for, you know, for a car company is that loyalty. But also keeping the consistency there. Like AMG, for example, huge. Australia is in the top five markets for AMG worldwide in terms of penetration and in terms of numbers.
Right.
Last year, we sold 1,030 AMGs, which is, you know, a serious number of cars. And those people, they come back. People come back again and again. And it's the same with other prestige marques, that a lot of people, they like the characteristics, they like the feel. So it's not unique to us.
I guess it'd be getting the younger buyers into Mercedes might have been more of a challenge than, say, someone like Audi. A-Class
and new B-Class. B-Class shown at Frankfurt. It'll come to Australia first quarter of next year. That's going to be priced pretty aggressively.
Right.
It'll probably upset a few other brands. A-Class probably comes about a year later.
Right.
And there's a number of cars that will come off that platform. So it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out because, yes, you need to, you know, you've got to get people in at the start of your range and keep them all the way through. And that's where, you know, cars like that are very important, but they've got to be, at the end of the day, they've got to be a Mercedes, or if it's a 1 Series, it's got to be a BMW. Like, it's got to have the feel. If it feels different, then what happens is they progress up the range, people think, well, actually, it doesn't feel like, you know, the car that I had before. So you've got to keep those characteristics. They're very important.
Yeah, absolutely. And Mercedes, of course, in the news recently when you guys took a few of the... it's the G-Class.
The
G-Class up the Canning Stock Route, which for our listeners is in...
You may remember we briefly talked about this a couple of weeks ago.
1,670 kilometres of hell.
Yeah. Now, were you on...
I was. My... My colleague Jerry Stamoulis, he was on the first week.
Yep.
And I did the second week. We met at Well 33, which is sort of halfway, about 300 kilometres from nowhere. And it's 1,670 kilometres in total, the Canning-Stock route.
Of desert, basically.
Of desert, and it's a very punishing road. It probably only carries 1,000 vehicles a year.
Wowzers.
Some of the corrugations are literally that deep, like you know, halfway up your shin, some of them.
Right.
And there was this one stretch where they went for more than 35 kilometres. And just, yeah, I mean, if you didn't have a loose bolt in your head, you did by the end of that.
Yeah, right.
So in terms of doing these sorts of press events, is this a fairly unprecedented,
yeah,
in terms of scale, in terms of what you were trying to do? I mean, is this, as far as you know, at least in the Australian media, kind of the first?
It is. It was the first time a manufacturer had, and basically with the media, had gone from the start to the end of the Canning Stock route. Others had done parts of it. It was also unusual in that it was one of the rare occasions where an international event is held in a market where the market organises it. The other one we did was the hydrogen fuel cell cars. And so for us it was a huge undertaking, and logistically it was.
Many months in the planning, no doubt.
Many months. But it was, there's really nothing like it. If you haven't been to the outback, you've got to go.
Yeah.
It is extraordinarily beautiful.
I actually drove the Nullarbor when I moved over to Melbourne, and magnificent.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
Yep.
But, you know, we had a great time, and we had international journalists there. We had someone from Architectural Digest.
What?
I know, but it's, you know, it's not just motoring media that are interested in.
Oh, well, Architectural Digest, therefore.
Oh, it'll be a gorgeous spread.
It'll
be wonderful, so.
Were you scared at any point, though? Did you think, we are going to die out here?
No. Look, we had
pretty sophisticated setup, by the
way.
We had sat phones.
We had sat phones. We had a satellite dish. So that each night as we set up, the media and the Ben's people, we're online.
Mm.
Quite a, I suppose, surreal feeling, I guess, filing stories and communicating in the middle of
the middle of nowhere.
Out.
Absolutely. Like, seriously, in the middle of nowhere. And with a laptop on your lap.
Yeah.
No. Tapping away.
Isn't that crazy?
You know, people checking their Facebook and, you know, our photographer sending images. You know, the guys from the Sunday Times, you know, they were sending video files and it was extraordinary. And, you know, like, you walk 30 feet away and, you know, you drop out of the coverage. But within this, you know, this, I suppose, this 50-metre circle, you've got really, really strong coverage, actually stronger than we have at work.
Bizarre. Now, I guess what we wanted to find out of it was, how did the G-Class handle?
Mm.
It did. Look, we had some issues with the shock absorbers.
Which was reported.
I mean, a shock absorber is a consumable on a car, so, I mean, I wasn't all that concerned. I decided to have a lay day, as we call it, which we're going to have later in the trip, to actually fly some extra ones in. So that we had ones to fix the ones that had gone US, unserviceable that is, to have some spare ones. As it happened, we didn't actually need any of the spare ones. So
okay.
A lot was made of it, but, you know, to be honest, people say, oh, you know, you're trapped, you know. I mean, you know, we had more food than, you know, all the volunteers at Joy could eat in a week.
Sounds like a nice getaway, to be honest.
And we were, you know, like, you know, half a day's drive from an airstrip, and we had better communications than most people enjoy at home.
I think people just want to hear drama, though.
Oh, yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, yeah.
But look, you know, it was testing for the vehicle, but at the end of the day, we finished it, and those vehicles actually went on to do another 7 days.
Oh, wow.
They drove up to Broome.
Oh, did you have a little holiday?
No. I had to come back to work, and I had to have a shower.
Yeah. Thank God for that.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it'd be very stuffy in here. Look, we do have to wrap it up there, but
cool.
I just want to finish off quickly. Can you name your favourite Mercedes of all time?
Look, there's two.
Mm-hmm.
I think, actually, I'm going to have to lie. There's more than that. The 540K from the 1930s.
Right.
300 SL Gullwing, the original Gullwing.
Of course.
300 SEL 6.3 from 1969, because my father had one. And probably the car I think that's influenced more than any was the original A-Class in terms of packaging, and you know, it's been many copied. But 540K, 300 SL Gullwing, and 300 SEL 6.3, which, of course, effectively was an S-Class. So they're my three.
Arguably on different ends of the desirable spectrum, I would have thought.
Well, yeah. A little bit. But
all pretty quick, though.
Yeah, and that's kind of the main point. Yeah. Mine was, mine was the SL from the 80s.
Great car.
Beautiful.
Great car.
Yeah, mildly obsessed with that. Look, David, Mac and McCarthy, thank you very, very much for joining us here on Fender Bender. We'll hope you'll join us again at some other point. Don't forget to go to Facebook, Fender Bender Joy, and tell us all about your favourite cars from the movies.
Sometimes, especially to car heads like us, I guess, something made of steel with four wheels can steal the show from the flesh and blood characters. I'm of course, referring to Kit from Knight Rider.
Ah, yes.
A choice between the Haff, or the Haas, I should say. The Hoff. Hoff. I'm really getting my nicknames confused today. It's bloody shocking. Kit or the Hoff? You know, yeah. I've got to say, Kit really stole that.
That was pretty amazing. That was a TV show, but that's fine. I think they did did they do a movie as well? They might have done both.
I'm not sure. I know they did the remade TV show last year, which was abominable. And we'll pretend that never happened.
That was shite.
It was interesting to talk about the Madge song we just played from the Bond movie, because, of course, the James Bond series is no stranger. We've had a series of Aston Martin DB5s, which is probably the best-looking car of all time. At least they were the older ones? They were. It's even through to the Lotus Esprit that Roger Moore took underwater. How can we forget that? The only good thing about any Roger Moore James Bond ever made. I know it's a big call.
That is a massive call. And, of course, we had the other thing with the Pierce Brosnan movies is we saw a move away from Aston Martins, and that was, I think, BMW. Again, probably good that Mac has left the studio.
Product placement at its best. And this is, you were mentioning this, you saw Horrible Bosses.
Absolutely.
The other night, and you had a sudden indescribable urge to go out and buy a Volkswagen Jetta.
Yeah, it was actually really full on, like, and it looks like a good car, but the way that they framed it in shots and stuff was very much
product placement.
This movie is brought to you by the Volkswagen Group, and look, that's how it is now. I mean, look at Transformers,
Bumblebee, the Camaro, of
absolutely
course.
Even, I mean, television, everything. It's just how it goes nowadays. But we've had quite a few people, I believe,
we've had a huge amount of responses.
Thank you, guys. We love you.
The DeLorean, of course, is one that keeps coming up.
DeLorean, of course. So that's Back to the Future 1 through 3.
There is actually a DeLorean in Melbourne.
I've heard this. Very exciting.
I'm dying to see it on the street somewhere. And
what was the car in Mad Max?
The Interceptor, based on the Ford Falcon XA, of course.
That's pretty exciting.
Legendary mean machine that it was. Oh, we've had a hit. We had the Plymouth, the 58 Plymouth Fury from Christine. She'll possess you and then she'll destroy you.
That's right. That was a little bit frightening. The General Lee from Dukes of Hazzard, of course.
Hell, the truck from Duel. I think this is a segment that has some legs, and we've had such a strong response from everybody out there. I think we really need to continue this.
We do.
Make a bit of a weekly thing of it.
We do. There's Yellow Rolls Royce from Gary from Brunswick. The classiest car from movie has to be the Yellow Rolls Royce.
Movie
the same name.
I'm not a movie buff. I don't know of that one.
Ah, of course, we've got someone else who hasn't put their name here. I'm a fan of the Porsche 928 in Risky Business.
Talking about product placement.
Yes, and freaked out when it went into the water. And, of course, we love the Lotus in James Bond. Yes, yeah. Look, there's lots out there. My personal favourite, I'm going to get personal with you guys, is there's two. Now, I'm probably showing my age here, but the Cannonball Run movies. Mike, did you see those at all? This is like early to mid-80s.
I'm going to show my age as well. By the way, in the early to mid-80s, I actually wasn't born.
That's true. Oh, my God, I'm old. It's true. Look, the Cannonball Run movies it was just like a rally kind of around America. And you had to get to a certain point. It was hilarious and ridiculous. But the Lamborghini Countach in that, the sexy girls drove. I think Farrah Fawcett was one of them.
The prototypical Italian car.
Oh, my God.
Gorgeous, but you would want to own at least six other cars for when it was broken down. You know,
apparently
one for each other day of the week.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's all about the looks, isn't it? Who cares about anything else? The one that I really need to mention is the fleet of Minis from the original Italian Job.
Yeah.
Not the remade Mark Wahlberg one, the Marky Mark one. That's another remake we'll pretend never happened, but the original Michael Caine Minis, how can we possibly
pass them? They were pretty spectacular. You're quite right there. But look, I think you're right. I think, you know, we've got a lot more to talk about this, you know, TVs and movies and this could go on for a long time.
Indeed. So I think all your listeners, please keep sending us your suggestions to the email or to the Facebook. And, you know, we'll compile as big a list as we can, and we'll make this a segment maybe on the next show.
I think slash competition.
Ooh, I think we can do
to
that.
To see what car gets the most votes. I'm mad for a competition, though.
Yeah, I think we need to unleash the competitive side.
Yeah, why not, guys? Why not? Look, that has been Fender Bender for another week. We were very lucky to have the wonderful David McCarthy here. So a big thanks to Macca for coming in. Thanks to Jerry on the phones, as always, and Gary for the news. And, of course, the lovely Mike.
Indeed.
Thank you very, very, very much.
Indeed. We also need to thank Jerry because the TV show Cars was actually his idea originally.
Very right. Mm. Thank you, Jerry.
Fount of inspiration.
Yes, always, always. Lots more coming up over the next few weeks. More interviews, more news, more car-y goodness.
And me babbling about Frankfurt more and more and more.
That'll be a big one, guys. Stay tuned because there'll be lots of news coming out of that. And it's all very fresh and exciting. So that's going to be one to stay tuned for. This has been Fender Bender. We love you guys. We really do. Have a wonderful week and safe driving.
To find out more about Joy 94.9, check out joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.